Welcome back to Tip TV Finance. So we're joined now by Conor Campbell, who's a financial analyst at Spreadex. How are you today, Conor?
Very good, thank you.
Right, let's have a look at the charts you brought in today, starting off with the FTSE 100. What's this telling us?
Well, it sort of seems to have lost momentum a bit. You know, from our clients' perspective, they haven't really changed the way they've been trading for the last fortnight. It's pretty much whenever it's crept above 7,000 or, you know, towards 7,100, our clients have been selling. I think they really don't see it staying at those highs in the next coming months. So I think however long it takes for it to gradually fall lower, I think our clients seem to be willing to sort of wait out this current peak and see it tumble towards Christmas, really. This week, you've got the UK jobs report on Wednesday. That's sort of the biggest sort of swirl of data in the middle of the week. Doesn't seem to really be set to show much, though. I think the wage growth is expected unchanged at 2.3%, unemployment rate is expected unchanged at 4.9%, a slight increase in the claimant count change, but not enough to really suggest any kind of major shift in the sort of the UK jobs market. So that, again, that's not really going to help or hinder the FTSE, so you could see it continue to chug along at that 7,000 mark, maybe dip a bit lower, maybe dip a bit higher. I think it's really going to be dependent on how the pound behaves to whether the FTSE can gain any extra traction. But like I said, our clients, whenever it dips towards 6,950, there are a few buyers coming in. So at the moment, there is enough support to suggest it's not going to fall too far away from 7,000. But like I said, our clients aren't a particularly big fan of the FTSE being at its current highs.
Right, but it was one of the things that the weaker pound was driving the FTSE higher. That doesn't seem to be the case now. So
no, that sort of... I think I was saying last week, it was interesting to see how long it was going to take for the weaker pound to stop being a positive for the FTSE. It seems like it might have got all the juice it can out of that trend, really, and that's why it's sort of stalled around the 7,000 mark and can't necessarily build beyond 7,100. You also got to bear in mind, 7,100 is effectively its all-time high. It's hard to really find justification to surpass that if all you're basing it on is a weakened currency, really.
Yeah, let's have a look at the pound itself. Which is against the euro here. Better rate in reality than you get at airports at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. I think airports, it can be as low as 90 cents on the pound, which is awful, especially if you're going on holiday later in the year, as I am. Yeah, it's not looking good. Like it's, you know, keeps dipping towards 1.10, which isn't great. You know, 1.11 seems to be its sticking point at the moment that it is returning to. That's sort of the key level that... keeps getting mentioned. I think interestingly this week it's not all the action around the pound euro isn't coming from the UK side of things. You've also got the ECB meeting on Thursday. Draghi's unlikely to announce anything concrete, even though I think analysts are still expecting some kind of move or tweak to the programme before the year's out. What's interesting about this week, however, is that last week you had reports that the ECB potentially might be ready to taper off its bond buying programme, and the central bank come out and denied that was the case. But it does put extra pressure on the ECB this Thursday to sort of set a tone of, you know, the usual, we'll do whatever it takes to make sure, blah, 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 blah. So that is likely not going to be in the euro's favour if Draghi does come out and firmly state that they're committed to the current bond buying programme. You know, it'll help the DAX and the rest of the euros and indices push up, but it might help some slight relief for the pound heading into the end of the week. Again, like we've seen with the FTSE, not a lot of change between what our clients are doing week to week. They're still fishing about for the lows, looking for some kind of rebound from that 1.10, 1.105 mark. However slight, I think, unlike the FTSE, where they might be waiting for a slightly long-term dip, with the pound, I think they're just trying to take any kind of minor climb they can, really, for short-term profit. So, like I said, buying at 1.10, 1.105.
Okay, well, let's go on to the... stocks. Travis Perkins not looking very happy.
No, not looking very happy. It's sort of a classic stock hit by the Brexit, you know, sort of DIY, builders, merchants, the kind of sort of the sector that was right in the eye of the storm, really, post-Brexit. Back in August, it released what superficially was a very strong half-year report. I think pre-tax profit jumped nearly 11% to 176 million. Revenue jumped 5.8% to over 3 billion. Like-for-likes were up 3.1%. However, the company said that in the run-up to the referendum and the aftermath of the referendum, demand had significantly decreased, which obviously took the stock lower and sort of nipped in the bud any momentum. Since then, you saw it climb to the £17 mark, but the pound's prolonged plunge in the last sort of fortnight or so has dragged it back down to the £14.50 mark. Interesting to note, in August, it did state that whilst it had seen a weakening demand around the referendum, as the referendum sort of was in the rear view mirror, demand had started to pick up again. If that trend continued in throughout September and into October, then you could see it bounce away from the sort of the lows it's surfing at since the pound started to really fall quite dramatically. So our clients buying around the 1450 mark, dependent on Travis Perkins coming out and stating that demand has recovered somewhat from sort of the dog days around the referendum.
Okay, let's have a look at a couple of US stocks. Goldman Sachs.
I think they're reporting this afternoon. It sort of spent most of the year trying to recover from its pretty awful January, which saw it, I think, plunge X amount of dollars. That was also when the $5.1 billion charge from the Department of Justice was announced. Also, its quarterly releases haven't really helped much. I think in the first quarter, it was sort of uniformly bad. Earnings per share dropped 50% to $2.68. I think revenue dropped similar amounts, I think $6.4 billion, not great. Second quarter, you know, slight improvement. Earnings per share surged 88% to, I think, $3.72, sorry. But revenue still fell 13% to $9.1 billion. This time around, however, it looks like it could finally produce an unambiguously positive quarterly statement. I think earnings per share expected to rise 30% to $3.72. Revenue, likewise, expected to raise 8.2% to $7.4 billion. I think also it's got the pressure of JP Morgan and Citigroup both last week reported better than expected earnings. So Goldman Sachs, really, there's a chance for it to post something slightly better than what it has done earlier in the year. However, our clients, I think they're looking at it sitting at 170 and don't really fancy it to go much higher unless it really does spectacularly beat what's being expected. So our clients are selling at the 170 mark.
Okay, and finally, Microsoft.
Microsoft, you know, sort of in the shadow, really, of stuff like Apple and Amazon and all these other huge tech stocks. However, it's trading at all-time highs, which is, you know, for a company that's been around a long time, especially in terms of, you know, tech stuff, that is very impressive. Its fourth quarter figures in July were, you know, miles away from the third quarter figures that you can sort of see in mid-April caused quite a dramatic fall. The complete contrast in July, you saw a 2% rise in sales to $22.64 billion. I think earnings per share jumped 7 cents to 69 cents, and that was 11 cents higher than what was expected. I think the key thing for Microsoft at the moment is its intelligent cloud division. That includes Azure, which is sort of the rival to Amazon's web services division. That saw revenue as a whole surge 7% to $6.4 billion. I think that's far faster than analysts were expecting that division to grow. And considering that's likely going to be one of the biggest growing sectors in the coming years, the performance of that division is going to be key in terms of investors' reaction into Microsoft's quarterly performances going forwards. In terms of the wider figure for its first quarter figures, I think they were released on Thursday. The only slight increase expected, really, I think a 0.2% rise in revenue to $21.71 billion and a 1 cent rise in earnings per share to, I think, 68 cents. However, if its you know, cloud division can post far better than expected figures once again, you could see it jump from that $57 market to all-time highs. Considering it's quite high, you think our clients might be a bit more wary around the stock. However, we have seen buying around that $57 mark. I think they're happy with Microsoft's performance going forward. The success of its cloud division makes it sort of one to watch in the coming years. So, like I said, buying around the $57 mark.
Connor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back after the break.